Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 25 of the Diz Unlimited podcast, coming to you live from the studio that dreams built. I am your host today, Rhino, joined by Hannah Anderson.
Hey, friends.
And Craig Williams.
Ahoy, ahoy.
I want a slide whistle. Whoop, so when I introduce you guys from now on.
I love that.
Joining us all the way from Melmac, boy, are his arms tired, our newest panelist, Alf.
Glad to be here.
These sound a little Swedish chef to me, Alf. You must have spent some time over there at IKEA before you came here. But just want to remind everybody that this and everything that we do here is brought to you by Dreams Unlimited Travel, experts at helping you plan the perfect Disney vacation. When you book with them, it costs you nothing extra on your trip, and you help support the channel and all the content that we produce. So head over to dreamsunlimitedtravel.com to get a free, no obligation quote today. And it is brought to you by our Patreon supporters. If you want to learn how to get more exclusive content from different members of the Diz team, plus join in on our live post show that we do immediately following our Tuesday show, you can head over to dizunlimited.com. Nope, that's not the website. Patreon.com/dizunlimited. Also, if you are somebody who enjoys listening to the show, I just want to emphasize there is a lot of audio content over there as well. So it's not just for the people, folks on YouTube or anything like that. So check it out. And if you are watching us on YouTube, if you want to go ahead and give us a thumbs up, boy, would that be swell. And subscribe to the channel. Click that little bell and you'll get notified whenever we publish new videos or have any sort of fun content for
you. I'll get a cowbell for that part.
Are you going to monitor while we're doing the show as people subscribe and you just ring the cowbell every time it happens?
More cowbell.
I kind of like that.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah. Next week.
Next time. Dreams. All right. Well, let's jump right into the news this week, starting with some business talk. And no, we're not discussing the settlement agreement from litigation in state court between Disney and the Central Florida Tourism Oversight District. That did, in fact, happen. But we're going to look at CEO speculation. All right. Put on your opera glasses because we are looking for rumors out here. CNBC has released an article about Dana Walden, and not from Walden Books. My mistake.
Glad you made that clear.
But Dana Walden and how she could become Disney's first female CEO. Walden joined the Walt Disney Company with the Fox acquisition. Walden is co-chair of Disney Entertainment currently, and her internal competition for the CEO spot includes Disney Experiences chairman Josh D'Amaro, ESPN chairman Jeremy Pitaro, and and the other co-chair of Disney Entertainment, Alan Bergman. CNBC states that Disney execs privately have said Walden is the favorite to land the job due to her relationship with Iger, her track record of success as a TV exec, her trust amongst the Disney board, and the symbolism of becoming Disney's first female CEO.
Here.
All in her favor there. So, what do you think? Did you guys know who she was before this conversation?
I mean, I did based on like everything that happened with Fox coming in, and she was one of the big names touted because I believe it was Peter Rice that, you know, he was fired a couple of years back by Bob Chapek, and she kind of stepped up after that. But it was like one of those things rumbling where I think she wanted Peter Rice's job all along once Disney was buying Fox. So her name has been swirling around for a little bit here, and you know, I'm actually not against this at all, because right now, like with the names that you completely listed out there, I feel like each single candidate has something that's going against them. And I don't know, something about Disney CEOs with me has always just kind of stuck with, like, they need to have studio experience more than anything else. And she definitely does have that. And so I'm kind of on her side with this. I mean, it's still a long process, but learning more about her and what she's done has me excited for the potential for what she could do for Disney.
Let's continue that conversation actually a little bit, because some of her former colleagues have questioned her abilities. It seems the general criticism is that she understands the creative process, but is lacking on the business side and has no experiences with investor interaction, geopolitical deals for parks and resorts, and acquisition and investment. These skills require decades of learning crammed into a couple of years. Also, what a resume one has to have to be able to have that under their belt. It leads you to be also question, like, how old would that individual also be to be able to get to that point? Not to be like, oh, whatever, but like, you know, I don't know, in my 39-year-old brain, I'm thinking to myself, like, these people, that's going to take decades of work, like we just said. And, you know, so, like, are we looking at a CEO that's like 80?
Well, I don't think we want that. There's a lot of things we want in this world. And one thing we don't want is people running things when they are too old. And I digress.
Here we go. Whoa. Where's my slide whistle?
I'd love a cat. But a good calico. With Bob Iger, though, the CNBC article actually said the exact same thing about him. They're like, well, when he kind of took over, he didn't really have any of the same experiences that they're saying that she's lacking in.
Have any of them? No, I think about, I mean, I know they've, like, a lot of them had studio experience. I mean, that seems to be, you know, kind of the trends. But, and then I'm sure people are going to talk about, what about Josh Morrow? What do you guys think?
Well,
because people, that's what people want, or the Disney Parks people want.
That's what Disney Parks people want. And the what I read about Iger is that the one thing that he had going for him is that he spent like 5 years as the chief operating officer before, which is, you know, that helped him learn a lot of the business side that he needed to know before settling into his position. So that's the next thing that whoever steps in to his place has against them, at least from Disney. You know, if they end up like shocking everyone and going from the outside, then it's a complete different ballgame. But internally, every single candidate kind of is at a disadvantage because they didn't really have that same time besides, you know, being around Iger and looking up to him as a mentor. And obviously the last guy who got a crack at it wasn't given the same amount of time and opportunity to try to settle into that role. So we've seen it be issues before, but as much as I like Josh D'Amaro as a person,
I don't.
I think that we've kind of seen that Disney can sometimes implode what they're doing in the theme parks and they can still manage to be successful. You know, we're still sitting here waiting for Disney to answer Universal in a bigger and better way than they have so far. But meanwhile, the parks were still crammed all of Easter week, and I'm sure this week, and it's just been insane. People are still coming to Florida. They're still traveling. They're okay to an extent with the prices of what hotels cost and with the experience that they're getting in the parks. So, knowing how to run the parks to appease parks fans really the strongest suit? Whereas we saw how much Chapek screwed up things on the Hollywood front with ticking off celebrities, making studios uncomfortable with how they would handle some of the situations they were dealt with. I don't know if the parks is necessarily what you need to be an expert at.
I think that Iger said it, like, you know, I can't quote him directly, but I think he said something along the way about being like, the thing that got lost is that the Disney company is a storytelling company and that runs through in all lines of their business. And it felt like there was somebody at the head of the company being like, yeah, F that, you know, and very, very dismissive of that sort of attitude, you know, of that sort of thing. And, you know, so that kind of trickles through, right? It trickles through into the parks. It trickles through into streaming, into the studios, into the things, because when you start, like, it felt, I don't know. Anyway, I do have a question though. So Iger,
for us or for Alf?
If Alf, what car are you driving today?
A Cadillac.
The thing is, so how long was Eisner CEO? Was it like 20 years longer? I know that Iger was 2005 and he was CEO tentatively, if everything had gone according to plan, he would have been CEO for 15 years, right? And then pass it on. Because what I'm saying with the Josh D'Amaro thing is that, like, it's not that he can't do that down the road. And I didn't mean to make ageist comments earlier or anything like that. But there are these people who clearly have a lot of life left in them in the Disney company. And again, that's not ageist. It just means, like, Josh D'Amaro was, like, a younger guy, right? Like, yeah. if they look for another CEO in 20 more years and he remains the Disney face like he's been, I feel like, for some time,
right,
for these like hyper fan base, it's still something that could happen for him down the road, you know, but she could end up being the best CEO that we've ever had. And she stays in it for 40 years, right? Like, that's what I'm saying. I'm just wondering what the average track record is for CEOs, a CEO, because Walt, I mean, it would have, yeah.
Well, Eisner would have started sometime, I'm going to say, between like 83 and
I read 21 eight. Years.
So 84 then?
Yeah, I knew it was in the 80s, and I was pretty sure it was before I was born. That's why I was like, okay. So 84, I think, would have checked out. If it was 21, 21 would have been to 2005. Because it was Iger right after Eisner.
Yeah.
Because that was the big thing, and no one in my family thought it was the same person. Oh. So I was like, just sounds the same name. It's not the same thing, but.
And then we got another Bob. But I will. Okay, so I agree with what Craig is saying about the studio. But, I mean, with all the park expansion coming, like, we're on the cusp of all that.
And 84 was,
huge investment. Mm-hmm. All right. Is it better to have a parks person in the CEO role, or is it more harmful? Because then who are you going to place Josh D'Amaro with? And then is he going to be like, sorry, guys, I thought I was being groomed by CEO. I'm out.
You know what? Someone could easily take Josh D'Amaro if they wanted to, or he could bounce to something else. I don't know if he's necessarily out of the contention for being a CEO one day, because who knows if Dana Walden gets in and's like, you know what, I'm happy to do this for 10 years and I want out. Like, it does, just because, you know, maybe she's the one whose name doesn't mean that Josh D'Amaro doesn't still have a chance down the road, especially if he starts dealing with the other side of the business that he hasn't done before. But even with the investment going into the parks, I still think that the Hollywood side is what's dictating it, because when you're not outside of like celebrities in the movies they're making, they're also making the creative decisions on what television programs, what movies are they invested in that ultimately is going to make their way to the parks in these expansions, since they are so gung-ho on making sure that everything that goes into the parks is based around an intellectual property. Like, I mean, you want to have someone who has a strong sense of how to create movies and TVs to be in that position. So that way, when you're creating this stuff for the parks, you already have that good place to start at with the stories that they want to tell. So I still think it's movies is more important for me.
Well, you heard it here first. Craig wants more IP in the parks.
Yeah. Walden, speaking of what you just said, with Walden on the Hollywood front, she knows how to build relationships with talent. Behind and in front of the camera, she was on the team running Fox's TV studio during its hits like 24, Modern Family, This Is Us, New Girl, Bob's Burgers, Family Guy, Glee, American Horror Story,
and a lot more.
Yeah, she love Bob's Burgers. her success at Disney has included The Bear, Only Murders in the Building, Abbott Elementary, and apparently she's been heavily invested in the marketing for Bluey. But those are just some of her successes. And obviously, no one runs a perfect scorecard, I think, so she's had some failures too. But Iger's contract runs through the end of 2026, so he's not not running out of time or anything like that, so he's gonna have plenty of time, I think, to make a better decision that will go over better than the last go around and put it in front of the board. But it seems like, at least, I don't know, not like there's curveballs, but it does kind of seem like, okay, like any of these names, I'm kind of like, all right, like it's not one of those like, I don't know, I'm not afraid. It's not it's like we've already talked about. Disney is more than just the parks, more than just the movies, more than just the thing. And I think we worry about the one part of the company that we love the most, as opposed to like
the part we live near.
The branch as a whole. And you're like, I need John Favreau to be the next CEO. And you're like, I don't think so. Although didn't we daydream about that at one time?
We did to an extent, because I know we talked about it, and some of the people chatting right now have brought it up too. Like, part of what made Eisner work so well is that he had Frank Wells with him. So you had that same combination of the Walt and Roy. You had Walt handling the creative side of things, Roy handling the financials. A lot of that was the same for Eisner and Wells. And so you look at that kind of partnership combination, it can always be successful. So maybe with someone like Favreau, even though I doubt he would ever want the job or would ever be in the running for it, just having a creative person as CEO working with someone who's great with financials, I feel like that is a good winning combination. Walden could also fit into that mix too, but you could also argue that Alan Bergman could fit into that as well. And heck, even Josh, I feel like if he had someone strong beside him, could fit in there too. Maybe
they should consider pairing those two up then.
I don't know. I really think that honestly, the last time around when this happened, even though I don't mind Chapek as a person and think he was judged very unfairly for many things, I think that he was probably the worst candidate that they could have chose at the time.
It was like when Apple chose, I can't remember his name, the Pepsi guy.
Yeah.
It was that same idea where you were like, you picked a really creative thing and then you picked a numbers guy. Yeah.
And this and time
doesn't,
around,
doesn't really mesh.
I don't think they have any person that would necessarily be terrible for the company. It's just, it might take a while before it gets on the path that we want to see it go as fans. But I don't think, regardless of if it's her or Josh tomorrow, I don't think the parks are ever going to be in a bad place because they know the parks make them money. So they're going to take care of the parks. It's coming here in the future. We have to be patient.
Well, speaking of Big Daddy, Critter Talk is back to run amok to everyone's delight. We are just like last week. We are excited to discuss the first of the Zydeco critters coming to Tiana's Bayou Adventure. A new week means new critters to discuss, plus the reveal of the first attraction poster. These critters are ones that you're going to find at festivals and street processions as part of the Rara musical tradition from Haiti. Here is your Rara critter lineup. Clutter. There's too many critters to remember. Anyway. Okay. I hope everybody's braced themselves for this. Yeah. Here we go.
We will not assign genders.
Octavia the Bobcat. Octavia plays the vaxen, a single-note horn instrument popular in Rara music. She's an adventurous bobcat kitten, and she loves climbing and hanging out in trees almost as much as she loves performing. This daredevil almost never gets scared. We have Pawpaw the Bobcat. Not only is Pawpaw Octavia's devoted grandfather, but he's also taught her how to play in the vaccine. Pawpaw lives to make Octavia smile and has the view that everything has a way of working itself out. He's seen it all, but isn't jaded.
I really feel like these are like bias for The Bachelor. Like they're like,
yeah, I feel like it's like it has that sort of like they should be spinning around for a dramatic reveal with a zoom in and like a little sparkle or something like that. And they're like, well, guess what? Next, we've got Claude, the Louisiana black bear. I was reading the wrong one. Claude is a salt of the earth kind of bear, or as they say in the bayou, my Saturday night. Just kidding. Salt of the Mound, who plays his horn along with the other members of his family. He's a tinkerer who loves to create with things found in the forest and is frequently funny without intending to be, especially when it comes to his homegrown creations. So this is the bayou weed dealer, it looks like.
Yeah.
is the emphasis I'm getting here. But then we've got Bernadette, the Louisiana black bear. Bernadette loves to enjoy life, from splashing in the waters of her bayou home with her cub, Sebastian, to playing the horn with her mate, Claude. She's a clear thinker and is warm and supportive. Bernadette loves to sink into the bayou waters and munch on those plants, so long as Sebastian is clearly within sight. My God.
Don't worry, she's a good mom.
Oh, you're asking about Sebastian? Okay, yes. Sebastian, the Louisiana black bear, though he's definitely a mama's cub. Okay, we see the mama's cub there. Me too. Sebastian charted his own musical course as a drummer, despite his parents being devoted horn players. He's happy to follow his friend Octavia's adventurous lead as they explore and play, and is fascinated with the small details in the bayou, like the insects and mushrooms. So everybody's high as a kite in this ride. Finna, the gray fox. Finna's enthusiasm extends beyond her drumming as she's constantly thinking of new ideas with optimism and energy. This imaginative fox is continually starting new projects with excitement, and her friends accept and celebrate her unique thinking. Wow-wee. Okay, so here's the thing about this. Like, you're like, yeah, how long are we going to spend with these critters? And how many names are we going to remember? None, right?
But what is cool
and what's fun is that, you know, for how many – I like to think about the side of attractions that get lost, you know, the things to the average guest. It's like, I was talking to my friend and she likes to write. She's like a writer and stories, and she's telling me these backstories of these different characters. And I asked her where I was like, well, this one guy, like I was like, you have this guy's like whole story figured out, but I'm confused how it's going to connect into the main story of the thing. And she's like, no, it's not really for that. It's just for me. So I understand, you know, the place and the plot and where it goes. Okay. And I was like, oh yeah. Okay. I was like, I get that. And so I think this is fun because it's clearly like, they needed to give an intern something to do. No, not true. But you know what I mean? Like, it's just one of those where it's cool that I think they're trying to showcase Imagineering on full display, being like, yeah, there isn't, yeah, a single thing that goes in there without a thought behind it.
Well, and this is what makes Disney different. Like, I don't really know.
And yeah, I said that weird word earlier. We're going to acknowledge it, giggle, yeah, and move on with our lives.
I mean, it's cemented in there. In my
well,
mind,
whatever. But, talk about it in the after show. Okay.
No, I mean, this is what makes, I mean, it's funny to me, but this is also what makes Disney different. Like, other than Harry Potter, I don't know of anything at Universal that's like, oh, and this is our, you know, whatever, our banjo playing raccoon.
Yeah, it's I'm happy that the world is built out for this attraction even more. And like with the first critters, I feel like it was fun because you got to hear about them and you kind of know exactly where they're going to take place in the ride. With this one, I'm like, I don't, where are they supposed to be at as you're moving along here? So it's a great reminder that even though it's going to be the same layout as Splash Mountain was, we have a lot that will feel unique and brand new with this attraction. I mean, there's only so many places it can go while it's in the inside, but it's a big ride. But I like that it's not, even though we see so much of the outside right now, there's still so much happening inside that is going to completely surprise us. But the one thing they are missing out on, though, is that it, like, part of what made Splash Mountain easier, at least with those characters, is that you basically just added Brer to the front of everything, and then what animal it was, and that's
Brer Frog. Brer Bear.
Brer Possum. The possums had their own name. But yeah, it was a lot easier with that. So I don't know what the end goal is with all the names.
Well,
but
somebody brought up in the chat, they're saying they're wondering if the characters are going to be a part of that Disney Plus series. And like, if that's like sort of like how they're going to connect to the ride. But also think, you know, in this day of like social media with like TikTok and Reels and whatever, you know, is that it is bizarre the things that will randomly just kind of blow up and become like a thing. Like, I don't, you know, the goat on Thunder Mountain has his like legacy, you know, and stuff like that where you're like, okay. So it's kind of cool to know that if, when we get to this ride, one of these characters does become the center of like, I don't know, that weird insider thing community that happens in anything that we've ever been fans of that we hyper focus on. We'll know the name of it. We'll
so
know
which
its
one
backstory.
Is it going to be? Which animal you think?
Which one was it?
I think the bear was selling the weed.
No, I think it, what was the one with the license plate?
What was that one? Yeah.
I don't know. I'm thinking it's Pawpaw. Wait, no. Looking at
you
it.
Think
I
Papa,
know
you're Papa's in the middle
it. Yeah,
there, right?
Papa's in the middle, the big beard. And I don't know. Something about Papa. Papa's seen some stuff.
Yeah, he's got that wisdom.
Papa's seen some stuff.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm excited about it. I think they're just trying to get us like really hyped. And I think maybe it's sooner rather than later.
I'm almost at the point though too where I'm like, can you guys shut up and stop talking about it and just tell us when it's going to open? Because like, I don't want to be overhyped. Like, I don't want to be, I mean, it is the same. Ultimately, if you've been on the ride, you know the attraction in terms of track layout, the ride, where it's going to go up, where it's going to go down, you know, that sort of a thing. So I guess this is kind of the fun filling in the story stuff. I don't know.
I wonder if it's going to smell different. That's a weird thing. But, you know, everybody's into like the Splash Mountain water smell or the Pirates water smell. Is it going to have that new attraction smell? You know what I mean? You know, when you go on Guardians, and it smells like a new car. Smell like, I don't know. Is it going to have that new car scent? So,
I'm usually too busy smelling all the people around me, like not actively smelling.
And summer's
people.
Coming,
I'm
guys.
Just,
I put on stuff today, extra special stuff for you. Mm-hmm. Like I did the elbows and everything, and I was like, I'll put this little whiskey lotion on here,
put the lotion
and they'll be
on
like,
the skin.
Oh, Rhino, you smell good, but no one said anything yet. So here we are.
Actually,
I guess it didn't work.
I did not notice, but I smell the funk coming off of you. So there's that at least. But yeah, I'm hoping that we get the announcement next week with the next critter. critter reveal. So if you're planning on tuning in or listening to next week, more critters to come.
Well, let's take a look at the attraction poster, which has Tiana standing in front of the Louisiana Mount thing. There's a silhouette that of what appears to be some sort of mansion or house on the right. And then there's Tiana's palace on the left, which is hopefully a sign to come. But I'm not sure if that's just because the same poster is going to be for Disneyland. You know what I mean? Because they already do have Tiana's out there. Hannah, you and I are going to go.
This is Walt Disney World, though.
It says specifically?
It does say Walt Frontierland,
Walt Disney World.
Oh, okay.
And even if they reuse the artwork, it's still, you know, I'd like a little bit more consistency then.
So, I mean, we can't get a whole backstory on, like, these bayou critters, but they're just going to throw two buildings up on a poster.
Well, for anybody who's listening on the poster, too, it's got sketches of Mama Odie, Lewis, and some of the instrumental critters filling the rest of that poster. And yeah,
wait, but are you saying that the critters will be instrumental to the attraction?
Oh, God.
Walked right in.
Drown me.
In Splash Mountain?
Yeah. But don't, please don't. I don't want to die in that ride. But no, I'm excited. I'm excited. I mean, you got to think we're in April. We're in April right now. Business season coming.
Yeah, it's a great poster.
They're testing. There's people been on the rides, you know. So I saw human beings on it. So
I know. Basically, if you want to make sure that it's testing, it's any night of the week that I don't go to Magic Kingdom. Because every single time I've gone to Magic Kingdom, it's just been completely dry. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. I just want to see people on this attraction.
This guy's coming, shut it down.
Yeah, I'm living in a bizarro world where, like, they, as soon as my entrance clicks through, they're like, okay.
Cut the water, cut the water. Cut it. He's coming.
Turn off the hose. Greg's here.
Well, speaking of Big Daddy, rev your engines. I almost wore a shirt with cars on it, and I really should have, I guess. Do you smell that gas in the air? No, it's not Hannah. It's the hole in the ozone layer.
Taco Bell's coming later.
That's the beauty of this show. You don't have to smell it here. No, it smells nice here. But anyway, that smell, that's the hole in the ozone layer caused from Autopia, which actually I don't think is as bad as the Indy Speedway. But you're not going to smell it for much longer at Disneyland because guess what? The LA Times was told exclusively by Disney that the pure gasoline engines of Artopia are on the way out. The statement from Disney is, as the industry moves toward alternative fuel sources, we have developed a roadmap to electrify this attraction, and we are evaluating technology that will enable us to convert from gas engines in the next few years. Those are called batteries. Bob Gurr, the Disney legend who designed the first Autopia cars, is actually thrilled Disney is moving away from the gasoline-powered cars, and he dreams of a grander vision for Tomorrowland as a hub for stories about renewable energy, public transit, and other sustainable technologies that will help us create a better tomorrow.
Hear, hear. I mean, this is the plot for Cars 2. They get alternative fuel and everything goes wrong, just saying.
Wait, so are you? But what's the Michael Caine car in that?
Plan. Yeah, I was going to say. I don't know. Chapek's back and he's using bad alternative fuel that's going to.
I don't think they want to use alternative fuel, though. I think they want to use more electric fuel.
It also seems like it would save so much more money just to not have them running on gasoline.
Yeah, for sure.
It seems like a long overdue thing to me.
Yeah.
Can we get it in Florida? Probably not.
I don't think I would want it in Florida. I would prefer it just go away in Florida.
Oh,
that would probably be a better investment with that time and space, and maybe like put in some more like flat attractions in that area. Just something that, you know, eats more people up and is more fun. Like I know out in I think it's one of the Asian parks. I can't think which one. Maybe Hong Kong that has like the Baymax little spinning ride
that's like the Tomator one
and an alien swirling saucers. That would look great right in that area there and eat some people up, even though it's been done similar places there. But I would rather ours go. I think this is great for Disneyland.
I'm fine with that.
It makes me happy that it's going to just be a thing that gets to stick around for hopefully as long as it can last in Disneyland.
I like the one out there. Yeah. Like if you haven't done it, it's completely different. And it's like, because it like kind of goes up. You start at the top of the hill and you're like going down a hill and you go, if you time it, if you can get it just right and you get that scary moment when the monorail goes over you and you're like, this is where I die. Yeah, it's great. I love it.
It's a true adventure when you're going there through like actual like portions of going into the countryside, going off road for a second. It's actually really fleshed out. Correct. It's I love Autopia at Disneyland. Yeah. I could care less about Tomorrowland Speedway, but Autopia, in my opinion, it is great. And like so many people, if you just had the people mover running around Disneyland, ooh, then you would have this perfection of transportation where you have the submarines moving, you have the monorail going through, you have Autopia, you would have the people mover then. It just would have so much kinetic energy that you would need. And then, you know, if they could get rid of Astro Orbiter at the front and finally put it back where it belongs, further deep into adventure, into Tomorrowland, then you would also have the rocket spinning around. Like that's exciting. But I also like the idea of Bob Gurr's idea for a Tomorrowland that's no longer really space themed per se, and more about how the world should and could be a better place in the future. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Something that I feel like also ties into Future World in a way at Epcot, but in a grander way, because space gets outdated so easily. And
We're also in a reality where we, you know, when this stuff was built and it was still, we hadn't even gone to the moon yet when this park opened. And it's like, you know, it's one of those where that optimism of that time and era are gone. And, you know, it was very much like, wow, the moon, sci-fi, all the, I mean, science fiction was brand new, you know, in terms of like films and stuff like that. It was hot. And it was just one of those things where like, I think the common person knows so much more about space, and I don't mean in an educated way. I just mean like, you know, how many space movies have we seen? How many movies have come out since then? Where it's not the way we live our lives today. It is not a reality that we are leaving this planet, you know, like in that same way where they're like, can't wait till we live on that colony on the moon. You know, like it's not as that hopeful, optimistic. So I do love the idea of Tomorrowland being literally about tomorrow, but also trying to really encapsulate that sort of like ingenuity and optimism and innovation. Like, just like, I don't know, that building is sitting there kind of useless. Not useless, but the one the one that had Carousel Progress in it. What is that building?
That's their Innovations building that then has just been used for many things.
We have Stitch sitting here empty.
Stitch too.
Stitch is still living
and
there.
You know what? That's also part of our Tomorrowland that's so disappointing, is that while like Speedway has always kind of stuck out as weird, there were points with our Tomorrowland where they were kind of dipping into that, you know, grander idea of what the future could be, and not necessarily in a space way. Like with Alien Encounter, you know, that was more about, you know, these alien people have the technology to transport across the galaxy. And what if we could get that? I mean, that's arguably now too part of Guardians of the Galaxy, in that same idea with the transport spots. And, you know, with Timekeeper, that was taking you back and forth through the different eras. And then it kind of got dumbed down with stuff like Stitch's Great Escape and Monsters, Inc. Laugh Floor, and even Buzz Lightyear's Space Ranger Spin. And I would love to see that stuff start to disappear away and come back up with a cohesive theme on both coasts.
This probably is an unpopular opinion, but I wish they would do almost like how Hollywood Studios is like the Hollywood that never was. Like, yeah. I would like a commitment retro to that. Yeah. Tomorrowland that was kind of like, almost going heavy on what you were saying, like the optimism.
The mid-century modern look.
Yeah, yeah, mid-century, like, you know, hopes and dreams of the future kind of thing.
I'm thinking like people with the dome helmets.
Yeah, those were awesome. That sort of, yeah, that, like, would be great. Yeah. So, but I think Carousel of Progress ties into that. I think People Mover would tie into that. Autopia.
I think it does too. I worry though that, I mean,
House of the
Tron,
Future,
I think I would argue Tron would be better in that too, because it is almost same idea of the technology or this otherworldly sort of idea.
Yeah. I worry that we're all part of this group that has such a nostalgia for a time period that we didn't live in.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if the rest of the world has that or would embrace it. I hope they would. I mean,
probably not.
Those decades were famously not great for many other people that look different than the three people in this room.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't want to belittle that, you know, but I do like the idea of an alternative reality, you know, sort of like, what is that show that you say I should always watch? The one about space. Isn't there one about that where it, like, the If the Russians got to the moon.
For all mankind.
But I don't believe that's a positive take on it. But
And it gets very soap opera-ish as it goes on. It's not a perfect show, but it's still entertaining.
Now we're talking about it.
But I think everybody in this room kind of all agrees that sort of optimism and positive outlook. Yeah. I think Tomorrowland has the opportunity to really encase that. And we think it should, I think.
There's so much in the world right now that is making you not optimistic. Maybe the word is pessimistic that I was looking for. So it would be great if you could walk into this park that's all about breaking that reality that we live in and just having moments of joy. If you could also find true optimism in that too, I think that would be a great thing.
I think you just pitched Disney Parks. There's your next commercial, Disney. You're welcome.
I'd like more cats.
Well, where were you on the critter conversation? I thought that was the perfect segue.
Was a bobcat a cat?
Discuss. Well, Epcot. Sorry, Alf. We're going to scoop by that. Epcot. This joke doesn't really work anymore. But Epcot also joins the transportation game. Well, actually, it's not transportation, but it's a spinning sphere that transports performers in a circle. So it kind of is like transportation. I'm sorry. I saw this clip online and I was like,
I don't like this picture.
Anyway, the anti-gravity theater troupe who has been seen performing at the Epcot International Festival of the Arts is now putting on a new show in World Celebration Gardens titled Forces of Nature by Anti-Gravity, representing Mother Nature and different elements. This is just one piece of new entertainment added to a theme park, because just down the street over at Disney's Animal Kingdom, a guitar-playing Dino Institute intern... We're sure this person works for Disney and they just didn't walk
just
in.
No, he works for Disney.
It has been. Okay, never mind. I know who this is. Has been popping up at Restaurantosaurus to sing and talk about dinosaurs. We have our friend Brooke to thank for knowing who this was. Thank you to our friends from Blog Mickey for allowing us to share their photos, and head over to blogmickey.com for lots of great articles about Disney. But what do we think about these entertainment additions? This fella seems a little out of this world.
You might say that. There's a bunch of interns, and I have not been able to experience it yet.
You know what
I
makes haven't. Me sad about it, though? Sorry, is where he's playing is in the Restaurantosaurus Lounge.
Yeah,
I'm not going in there anymore. Yeah,
I mean, it could end up being better for that spot, though.
Maybe, but there's only tables for four people, and so it'll be one of those where he's going to be playing right directly here. At you, scene in the Barbie movie.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Regardless, I cannot wait to see this little bit of entertainment. This is one of those things where, when stuff like the Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser shuts down and you have all these performers and equity actors that you're like, where could there be a spot for them? And the answer could easily be no. Let's just move on and forget the past. But then there is moments like this where out of nowhere, an area that is supposed to shut down, then randomly you get someone that feels very familiar and distant all of a sudden is, playing guitar, making jokes, and getting people to want to go to Restaurantosaurus Lounge, even though that was such a good hidden spot for so long that we didn't want people to know about. And now they're going to know for other reasons.
Good. I know, and it's quiet. Good.
Jimmy's a great bartender over there.
The music's good.
It's always great when there is these little touches of that it sort is, of entertainment flowing around the parks. I think it brings a lot of life to a lot of these areas too. It adds that little extra something, and that is the Disney thing, right?
Yeah.
It's just that little extra.
Sure. Well, but that being said,
I don't know about that Epcot thing. Yeah, okay.
I watched
the video of it, and I'm sure these people are very talented.
Oh, do you know how much strength that takes right there?
Oh, it is. The thing.
You've got to have core.
Well, it's the people who do what are the silks, the thing. My friend used to train for that and bruises and everything. It was crazy. Brutal. But is this the place for it?
I mean, there's something in that area. Yeah.
In that area, in the bright sun, this will be fun in July.
Yeah. Well, the whole thing is, first off, I guess the hours for it are six times a day, starting at 10 o'clock hour or so. And it only runs Wednesday through Sundays, I believe.
Okay,
they have Monday and Tuesday off for that. So it's only scheduled right now, I guess, to go through the summer. That could always change. It could get extended. But I mean, they need to do stuff in this area because the whole point of the World Celebration Gardens areas, besides a relaxing place to enjoy, was pitched as a place where, you know, we could have pop-up food locations. Yeah. We could have pop-up entertainment. That's and when true. It first opened, it was like, hey, we got two characters that'll meet you here.
And the Jamoners.
Good luck. And
the they'll be over in the garden soon enough.
And then, you know, they added a little, they've been slowly adding a little bit more. And as we know from last week, that soon Communicore Hall will open up. And this area is going to be a lot more vibrant and, and thriving. But I applaud them for sticking something like this in here because I feel like it's now filling a spot. You know, so much entertainment happens back in World Showcase. Now you're extending it to the front of the park as well. It's just, does this interest me? No. Not at all.
This is a personal preference, maybe.
Yeah. It absolutely is a personal preference. I think they're going to draw a crowd.
And here's the thing. Not to be rude, the shows like this aren't for me because let's not forget, you know, in France we used to have the whistle guy with the chairs.
Oh, no. That was the chairs. Italy. Yes, that's France. Yeah. But Sergio had his whistle. And
yeah,
Sergio.
And then
Sergio's,
he would know.
Somebody's still there.
Yeah, but
yeah, he's
not, Sergio I will detest forever.
But so Epcot, you know, and there used to be, I believe, players in like the UK. It used to be like everywhere had stuff. So I think it's just maybe stuff's been gone for so long that sometimes when these little things come out, I'm like, where did you come from? Like it kind of sticks out a little bit more. But I don't know. It is great. It does give more life to that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
It's like we used to, I guess. It's not, is it for me? No.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to see it yet, so I also want to see, too, like, what's the music like in comparison to the other surrounding background music in the area, because that whole place has a vibe, and I also wouldn't want it thrown off with what's happening with these little shows, but if it feels like it fits in, then I'm okay with it. And, you know, like the theme of the show, even if it doesn't come across being the Mother Nature and the forms of nature, like it does work in the garden sense, so I'm okay with it. I'll watch it the one time that I film them, and then after that I probably will never watch it again.
Maybe you'll become their biggest fan. You'll be there every Wednesday through Sunday.
Well, there's one problem with it. It happens at Epcot, and I am not a fan of Epcot.
That's right. Did you guys see they have like a sunglass hut in that area now too? Like one of those like
classic
areas
Disney.
That we thought were like, oh, they could put a food booth there, and it's there's a sunglass.
Right
there.
Okay.
Yeah, so you can buy some Ray-Bans. That way you can see them. Ooh. You can buy Ray-Bans.
I don't have Ray-Ban money. I'm more of like a Roy Bond money.
Oh.
Roy Bond. His favorite thing, New York City. When they're giving you
the Roy Bonds and the
Nike with two E's watches.
And the Louis
that's where I got my first Rolex.
That's where I got. I did actually buy a Nike watch there.
Awesome.
Not to be that guy. I was like, what do we got? $10? $10? Like, I was 12.
You know, the thing is, you never know when you'll lose your sunglasses and you need a new pair.
That's true. Hey, when are they going to bring back Citizens of Hollywood? I'm just going to derail this. I miss those guys.
I don't think they're coming back.
I know.
I also, is the trolley show back at Magic Kingdom?
No.
No.
Yeah.
Now, or the train show.
There's zero reason why the trolleys aren't running still and like with the with the trolley. Like it's they put the Dapper Dans on there and so it's like they have the physical ability to put performers on there. It's yes, you just don't want to pay performers outside of the parades and stuff to get on these things in extra places. But for Magic Kingdom, it's happening every morning. Those trolleys are going up and down regardless. So that to me is like the bigger crime of just put people out there. And I understand not bringing back the citizens of Main Street and the mayor and all that. That's a little bit added just on the side that makes it that pluses the experience, but I think that falls into Citizens of Hollywood too, where it's entertainment I would like to see and brings the areas to life. Yeah. But at the same time, it's not, I feel like Disney sometimes gets into the mindset of like, well, you know, there's not something actively happening with this, so why put them in there? With the trolleys, if they're running them up and down every day, throw some performers on there besides the Dapper Dans and do a little show, be cute in that way, that's great. But to add extra bodies to the streets, that's something that they just don't want to do anymore. And it's a shame because it does – I would rather see more entertainment on Main Street and more vehicles on Main mm-hmm. Street than I would prefer over at Hollywood Studios with Citizens of Hollywood, because I feel like for me, Hollywood Studios, eventually that idea of Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood is going to go away.
Oh, that breaks my heart. Ugh.
I just...
Okay, now I'm sad. Bye, everyone. I'm leaving.
I mean, I could be completely wrong with it, but as they need to do more with that area, it's just as they continue to change the park to be all these different weird sections, I feel like that's something that could potentially go away one day. And then, you know, you don't want random Hollywood citizens just walking around.
Well, you know what's kind of weird about... none of those areas have never really clicked for me, because, like... Main Street USA, and so you have a mayor and you have the people that live there and everything like that. Why aren't there people that live in Frontierland or Tomorrowland or Fantasyland? Like, I never understood why it's only there. And it's the same with Hollywood. Like, okay, well, I guess we have like Rey and Chewbacca roaming around in Galaxy's Edge, but the, you know, the, like, and the toys have their meet and greet. So I guess at Hollywood Studios, it's a little more in the park like that, but I don't know. I think I would have liked it more if, like, there had been more, like, we saw a cowboy, like maybe he comes out on his horse or he like talks to people, you know, and says, I don't know, stuff like that. Just
Country Bears used to be out there.
Yeah, but see, I guess that's where Hannah, with that statement, I think she makes a point that if you ask Disney, they'd be like, well, it's the characters that are in the attractions that bring those lands to lives. And that's their places. Okay. Like, so where
right, we'll bring the old guy and the boy out with the dog on Main Street.
Oh, Haunted Mansion. What?
Wait.
Old guy and the dog? Old guy, boy and the dog? What am I thinking of?
Jamal,
what
are up? You?
What? Up? Up? Oh. That's over at Animal Kingdom.
Yeah. Are you talking about like the caretaker?
I don't know what he just said, the old boy dog? And the dog. And I'm like, what is he talking about?
The old guy, the boy, and the dog.
I think I missed the boy. Bring them out with their chicken
and put them on Main Street.
Yeah. Oh, Kevin's
or leave the chicken at Animal Kingdom. It's fine.
Yeah.
But I would like to see this kind of streetmosphere back. It's one of those things, I don't think about it as much in Walt Disney World anymore because it has been chipped away at so much. But I always still get a kick every time we're at Disney California Adventure.
Yeah, I was about to
and
say.
Like the mail lady comes out on her bike.
Right. Oh, yeah,
and,
I do like that, yeah.
All of those characters, like I still lose it. And I think back to like my college program, we used to always love going over and interacting with the officer at Hollywood Studios with his banana.
They used to do the dating show out there. You guys remember
that
but one?
My worst nightmare is getting stopped by one of those people.
Me too, but I do
want to
watch.
No, thank you.
No. Well, this is a bummer.
But I will say, you make a good point, because at Disneyland, when they do like the band will come out with Mary and Bert and stuff, and it's like, yeah, and I like the vehicles. I don't know. So I got to think about it in reverse, because we live here and like the people come here. Whatever. Anyway, finally, WWMagic.com is reporting the Frontierland Shootin' Arcade is about to go away the way of Old Yeller.
Told you.
They're reporting that the free shooting gallery will permanently close this summer to make way for a new Disney Vacation Club member lounge. With so many changes coming to Frontierland and Disney stating more announcements will come in the future, is it shocking that this could actually be a possibility? 100%. I think this should have gone away years ago. And I know that people like it, but the idea that like more, I mean, I'm talking like, I think it's been 15 years now that Disney hasn't sold the pirate guns or any blasters from Star Wars, has not sold any gun-like looking things in their park, but yet you can still hold a thing that looks exactly like a rifle. Like a gun seems crazy to me, especially after they had one of the worst shootings in the United States down the street. It feels like one of those where I was like, I thought they would have nipped it in the bud at 2016 and been like, you know what? I think it's time to just close this and whatever. And I know people have their feelings about whatever, something, but I'd like to see it something that isn't a lounge, but I'm not a DVC member.
Yeah. See, yeah. I don't care about it from the gun perspective. I think it's whatever, however people want to feel about it. I've never had a problem with it as a shooting arcade in that way. It's actually fun. I used to use it a lot when I would be on vacation, and it was always that special extra treat when you found out that the shooting arcade actually was the money part was turned off and you could just shoot the guns for free, and that was fun. My bigger problem with the shooting arcade is that how much does it cost?
I've never played it.
It's free now.
Yeah,
it's free
years, all I don't think they
yeah, since the pandemic when it reopened with the pandemic it,
I think
it
you should
was
be like
free.
A dollar.
My bad. I guess I should try it.
I think it was like a quarter. It was because it was actual like
I thought it was like 50 cents cents. It might have been. I thought it was multiple coins the last time I tried, but like years ago.
Nepo baby had that shooting gallery money.
I know.
Eating his cinnamon rolls, popping his quarters.
During the parade, right before like the parades would come out at night, they would always
I'd hold my $25 balloon, and I would eat my cinnamon roll and hold on to my rifle.
I appreciate the side conversation, and now we're going to get ripped apart for talking over each other. No, it used to be they would make it free at night, and it's still free right now. The problem is half the guns don't work, because I always walk up to it and go to shoot, and I'm like, nothing's happening. And so they have let it get into such a state of disrepair that it's completely pointless and worthless anyways. But I don't want another DVC lounge, and I know they're going to build one in every freaking park.
DVC's taking over.
But it's going to take up so much of a big space. Like, think about how much room is at the one in Imagination. And, like, we're talking prime real estate in these parks is going to go for that. So what, DVC people can have some Coca-Colas?
I would have liked it if it had turned into something like how they have at the Pixar Pier at Disney California Adventure, where it's like the games.
Oh, yeah, and so, you can like, win the prizes.
You could play, you know, if you want to keep it still like the – shooting something, shoot the water balloon thing, you know, or like the roll the ball thing, or what, you know, and it can be the critters from Tiana's Bayou or whatever and stuff. And
I will
win those guys.
I will be adamant that I think those are so tacky. Like,
okay,
you just wait though, because I said the same thing, and now my kid loves them. So, you know, if he's happy, I'm happy.
Oh, man, no.
And in California Adventure, you can drink a beer while your kids do that.
I also think the element
with authority.
When those were built and opened, video games were not really a thing. And now kids are playing, you know, Call of Duty, whatever, Fortnite, whatever, everything under the sun. So, like, something like that, you're kind of like,
Yeah, I mean.
Are we talking about the shooting arcade, or are we talking about like the games that you could play?
I'm talking about the shooting arcade. The reason why I suggest the games is because it has that thing it has the element of playing with other people because you could win something.
Yeah, the shooting arcade still though was fun, because like when you play a video game, it's just flat on the screen like that. And so when you would set off like one of the little things that would happen, it always was that assurance of like, yeah, I'm doing something. I'm actually seeing a response with it. The games I don't want to ever see come to Magic Kingdom. I guess they work with something like Pixar Pier, but it's as much as I love Universal, that's one of the things that still makes me like, you walk through Jurassic Park and you're like, this area could be.
Those games are kind of different than the Pier ones, I think.
They're the same style of games. It's just Pixar Pier gives away better prizes to let you think that it's a lot better.
Good.
Ultimately, those kind of games are just a way to get people to spend extra money on cheap prizes, and it looks bad.
Tell it to these guys.
Yeah, I know.
Tell it to these guys.
This is
Rhino's
entire decor.
Look, they're all here. They're all here.
Hey, here's an idea.
And you could only
retheme
win them there.
It Red Dead Redemption 1 and 2. It fits the theme. You can keep your gun.
Alf, and you would have it be a. Cat shooting range. Okay, yeah. There we go. Good one. Good one, Alf.
Well, he wants to eat the cats. He doesn't want to shoot the cats.
We got to shoot him first to eat him.
I don't know. I think I
make it a kitty cat club. Oh!
I believe Alf would prefer a meal that's better served warm than cold. Prefers his cats live.
Alrighty, well, that's going to do it for this episode of the Dis Unlimited. I'm done. I just want to remind everybody about Dreams Unlimited Travel when planning your next Disney vacation. You get that no obligation quote free for you to do it, and it costs you nothing extra on your trip. DreamsUnlimitedTravel.com. And then the podcast, if you're listening to this, if you want to subscribe to it, rate and review us whenever you have the opportunity. Of course, YouTube, always open for future topic suggestions in the comments, are always welcome. Places for us to go and have another snack attack. I ran out of breath. My snack attack.
So tired. So hungry.
Snack attack. I got tired by the end of the sentence. So, you know, all that fun stuff. We get a dialogue going down there in the comments section. Let us know what you think about some of that stuff. So, but now some brothers named Sherman once said, "There's a great big beautiful tomorrow." But apparently I disagree. I didn't read this part. So I think there's a great big beautiful today. Now that we, oh, I hate you. Now that we've reached the end. Anyway, that's going to do it for this Big Daddy.
You make it look like you read the script before.
As soon as I see the YouTube like and subscribe, I'm like, okay, I don't need to read any further. Get it on the spot when I get there.
I'd like for you to give it one more chance now with the proper pauses. Do I need to start writing stage direction in with this?
Yeah. I'll hold up cue cards.
Exit left. The interior day.
I write the worst things possible because I'm like, surely he's going to read this and take this all out because it's
sometimes
pure and utter
I don't
nonsense.
Want to hurt your feelings, so I leave it in.
No,
your commitment to the song was great.
I'm going to be honest with you, especially today. I was like, I'm not going to change a lot of this because I didn't want to hurt your feelings.
You're the host. You should be writing the script.
I know, but you were the one who randomly started doing it one day, and I was like, I don't want to be ungrateful and be like, hey, you know what? I'm just going to wing it.
Well,
I don't want to be that guy.
Well, we dealt with that in the past.
Good to me.
It's not the future.
I do appreciate that you do this, and I'm going to read this. So here we go. Word for word. Ready? Now, some brothers named Sherman once said, there's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow, but I disagree. I think there's a great, big, beautiful today, now that we've reached the end. That's all, Big Daddy. Yummy, yummy.